From the studios of NPR West, this is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick.
And I'm Madeline Brand. This week, the Supreme Court will again consider the rights of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. The court will hear arguments in two cases.
The plaintiffs are Guantanamo prisoners challenging the law known as the Military Commissions Act. Congress passed this last year after the court's previous Guantanamo ruling, and we'll speak with a senator who helped write that legislation.
First, though, we are joined by Slate.com's legal analyst, Dahlia Lithwick. Hi, Dahlia.
Hi, Madeline.
And Dahlia, before we get to the cases that the court is going to hear this week, let's go back to the case previously, the one that inspired the Military Commissions Act, and that was Hamdan v. Rumsfeld. And as I understand it, the court delivered a major blow to the Bush administration with that decision, basically saying, Bush administration, the military tribunals you set up are unconstitutional. So what were the court's major objections?
They basically said that the tribunal system that had been set up to try the prisoners at Guantanamo violated both, you know, federal laws and international laws of war. And they said that, moreover, the Geneva Conventions apply to the prisoners there, and that means they need to get something that resembles a full and fair trial. They also said that the Detainee Treatment Act, which was supposed to strip the prisoners of their right to habeas corpus, did not apply to cases that were pending in the courts at that time.
Okay, so Congress then comes back with the Military Commissions Act, and it says what?
Well, the Military Commissions Act did exactly what the court said to do, which is, okay, up until now, the president's been acting alone. And in Hamdan, the court said, you go back, Mr. President, and you ask Congress to do this with you. And that's what Congress did. They essentially hammered out pretty much what the president had asked for. And then they went out of their way to say this time, look, we really, really mean it, that the habeas corpus petitions that were filed, whether they were filed before or after, whatever, even if they're pending in the courts, there is no right to habeas corpus petitions. You cannot go into a federal court and have your claims adjudicated before, you know, you've gone through the whole process of the military trial. And that was dramatically different. What it really did, Madeline, was throw down a gauntlet to the Supreme Court and say, okay, you know, you've gone through this once, you've gone through this again. Now you're going to go through it again. We are telling you that we are stripping these prisoners of the right to habeas corpus. Now you tell us whether or not it's constitutional.
So this week, the court will be reviewing the Military Commissions Act. Is that indeed what they will be looking at, these habeas corpus ideas?
Yes. There's two questions that the court is going to face squarely. The first is exactly the question you and I have been talking about, whether prisoners at Guantanamo have a right to challenge their detention through a writ of habeas corpus. If the court finds that they do have that right, they can go further and say, does the Military Commissions Act of 2006 thus violate the suspension clause of the Constitution? That's the clause of the Constitution that says the writ of habeas corpus cannot be suspended unless, quote, you're in cases of rebellion or invasion. So really, there's two questions, and they sort of go from these very, very arcane statutory questions to these very, very lofty issues of essentially the balance of power between the president, the Congress, and the courts.
Now, Dahlia, this is the fourth Guantanamo rights case, or the fourth and fifth, since it's two cases the court is hearing this week. Why so many?
Well, it's an interesting problem, Madeline, where you have sort of the world's slowest chess game going on. You know, the president sort of asserted all sorts of powers in 2001, as was appropriate. The Congress gave him some more powers. Then we kind of bump along, and then the courts say, well, no, that's too much. And so then we bump back to the president, and he makes some changes, and then the Congress gets involved, and then we bump back to the courts, and they go, eh, still too much. So it's just this extremely, almost excruciatingly slow game of sort of whittling down back and forth what are the president's powers in the time of war. And, you know, part of the reason that it takes such a long time is the court tends to do as little as it can do in most of these cases. So the court doesn't say, look, Mr. President, here is how a military tribunal has to look in order for it to be constitutional. They do as little as they can, Madeline. And so in some ways, every time the court has answered a question, they've sort of opened up 100 more. And so it's important to realize that what's happening at Guantanamo is that no trials are happening. No trial has come to a conclusion. Not one of these things has come to any sort of resolution.
That was Dahlia Lithwick, legal analyst at Slate.com.
And the Supreme Court will consider this case on Wednesday. And again, it deals with the constitutionality of Congress's Military Commissions Act.
One of the architects of the Military Commissions Act is Senate Republican Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and he joins me now. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Now, you authored the provision in the Act that says detainees can't bring habeas corpus claims in U.S. courts. Are you worried that the Supreme Court may find that provision, your provision, unconstitutional?
Well, for them to do so, they would have to confer a constitutional right on enemy combatants. We've never done that in any other war. The Japanese and German prisoners that were maintained here in the United States were never given access to federal court to bring lawsuits about their confinement. That's really never been done in the history of warfare, where you allow an enemy prisoner to go to domestic court to challenge the military's findings. So I can't believe that the Supreme Court will say that an Al-Qaeda member will have more of a right than a Nazi or a German, Japanese prisoner, but we will soon see.
Well, are you worried at all that the court has agreed to look at this act in these two cases?
Yeah, it's interesting. It'll be curious to see what the court's looking at. There are so many different ways they can decide this. Whether or not there's a constitutional right to habeas corpus by an enemy prisoner, enemy combatant, would be a sea change in military law and American law, a monumental proportions, but there's other things they could look at. Is the Combat Status Review Tribunal at Guantanamo Bay. There's so many things, I guess, the court could look at, but the fact that they wanted to hear this case is very interesting. The basic premise I've had since the war began is that we're at war, that the attacks of September 11, 2001 was an act of war, and the habeas statutes or habeas constitutional provisions have never been afforded to enemy prisoners of war. And my theory is that Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind of 9/11, is a warrior. And if you listen to him, he claims to be a warrior. And he deserves due process and treatment consistent with the law of armed conflict. And domestic criminal law should not apply.
Well, speaking of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, President Bush promised that as soon as this act was signed, that he would be brought to trial or brought to justice. Why hasn't that happened?
He's in the process now of being brought to trial. The first thing that happens when someone is captured is they go through a combat status review tribunal, which is an administrative hearing made up of military officers who will determine if the person is in fact an unlawful enemy combatant. Once that's been determined, the military will decide whether or not the activity in question amounts to a war crime. I think it's very clear, given the Sheikh Mohammed's own statements, that he will be treated as a war criminal and he will be processed under the Military Commission Act to be tried before a military tribunal for war crimes, not just being an unlawful enemy combatant. And I think that will be ongoing the middle of next summer, probably.
I see. Congress went back and forth with the Bush administration, and you were one of three senators who did so, about this act when it was being authored in the wake of the last Supreme Court decision. And are you satisfied with the way it came out?
Yeah. It's, for the most part, I think we found the sort of legal sweet spot here. There are people who want to deny the enemy combatant representation, you know, a truncated jury trial, basically legislative conviction because we're at war. I don't want that. What I want is to make sure that the law of armed conflict that's applied in other wars apply in this war. But because this is a war without end, an enemy combatant status determination could be a de facto life sentence, because there will never in my lifetime be an acknowledgement by an American president, I believe, that the war is over. So what I've tried to do is create a hybrid. Don't allow the enemy combatant to go into federal court and sue our own troops. That's something that would create chaos. Allow the military, under the Geneva Convention, under strict procedures, to make that determination. They're trained to do that better than federal judges, who the enemy force is composed of. But what we did differently is we allowed every enemy combatant at Guantanamo Bay to appeal their finding to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So unlike other wars, every enemy combatant will have their day in federal court. The Bush administration wanted no federal court review. Their initial proposal was to do it all in-house.
Now, you mentioned German and Japanese prisoners of war being allowed to bring habeas claims in U.S. courts. Given the fact that this is such a different war, there is no traditional battlefield, and,
right.
you know, we don't really understand or know exactly who our enemies might be, should there be a recalibration of the whole idea of habeas corpus?
I think what they should be is a recalibration of the role of the federal courts, because as you just correctly identified, this is a war without end, but it is still very much a war. Everybody at Guantanamo Bay will have a day in federal court, but it is important to me that we apply the law of armed conflict, not common criminal law, and I don't want to turn over to the federal judges in this country what has traditionally been a military decision, who is part of the enemy force. I don't mind judges looking at the military's the way they decided. I don't want federal judges to take that responsibility over from the military.
All right. Well, Senator Lindsey Graham, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina.
The Supreme Court often has to balance civil liberties and national security in wartime. During World War II, the government put citizens of Japanese descent in internment camps here in the U.S.
The fear was that these citizens could somehow aid the enemy. Several Japanese Americans resisted internment, including the late Fred Korematsu. He was jailed but fought his case all the way to the Supreme Court.
He lost then. Decades later, his conviction was set aside. Here's Fred Korematsu speaking about his legal limbo.
You feel like a man without a country. You're not accepted anywhere. You don't know which way to turn. And so you feel that you're not worth anything.
Later this week, an interview with Fred Korematsu's daughter about her father and the detainees at Guantanamo Bay.